Thank you, everyone, for coming out on such a cold and, I don't know, rainy, icy, whatever it would be. I want to speak about something that is very close to my heart, and that is the issue of tefillah and using tefillah to make a connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it's a topic that is a relevant topic in very good times, but it's also a topic, I think, that's even more important and even more relevant when things are difficult, when we have questions, when we feel alone, sometimes even when we feel scared. The Kuzari, the first source of the few sources that I have for you here tonight, the Kuzari, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, describes tefillah in a way that we often don't experience it. We often don't experience it this way. He says, "B'derech zu tihiyeh sha'at ha-tefillah l'chassid ki gar'in hazman u'piryo." For those of you who are familiar with the Sefer HaKuzari, in the third section of the Kuzari, he discusses the chassid. Now, of course, he's writing long before there were chassidim. He's not talking about a chusid. He's talking about a chassid. Someone who's righteous. Someone who gives Yiddishkeit their all. So he's writing about what a Jew is at their best. A man, a woman, what a Jew is at their best. And he says that the time of tefillah for a chassid is the seed of time and its fruit. In other words, the best few moments of the day. The best few moments of the day. Not an obligation, not something I do and then I feel good about the fact that I got it over with. But that tefillah is supposed to be the best time of the day. Ushar hasha'ot tihiyena lo kidrachim hamolichot el sha'azu. And the rest of the time, the rest of the day, believe it or not, are supposed to be hours when I can't wait to daven again. You may be a little young to remember the hotels and the Catskills, but I remember going as a kid to Grossinger's. And Grossinger's, you know, they had activities. If you went in the winter, they had a little scheme. Basically, everyone was there to eat. That's what you were there for. You didn't have to pretend you were there for anywhere else. You're basically there to eat. That was after, I was there after the singles time. There was a time you were there to meet people, but then you were there to eat. So basically, you left breakfast, and you looked at your watch, and you said, how much time do I have till lunch? I said, hey, you know, what can we do? If we go into that activity, we might come back. I mean, you're stuffed, absolutely stuffed. You're leaving breakfast about 9:45. Breakfast opens at 12. Lunch opens at 12. And you don't want to get involved in anything. You don't want to get too far away from the front of the dining room because you might miss when the doors open at noon. That's the way he says he's supposed to feel about tefillah. I don't know. I usually don't feel this way after Shacharis. Right? You feel this way after Shacharis and you're like, oh, I can't believe Shacharis is over. I'm not allowed to daven mincha for like 5 hours. This is terrible. 8 hours. I daven Shacharis at about 6:30 in the morning. He says, you're supposed to feel like when you finish one tefillah, that basically I'm now getting ready and I can't wait to go back and daven again. Hu mitzapeh. Shilabo'ah hu mitzapeh. You're just waiting for that next tefillah. Ki al yada hu midameh el ha'atzamim ha'aruchanim u'mitrachech min ha'behemim. He said, because when I can get there, when I can get to a place of tefillah, I leave this world. I leave this world. I'm not here anymore. I'm in a spiritual place. And I leave the physical world. Ukeshem shehayu lo shalosh itot ha-tefillah shebechol yom pri yom ovalelo. And look at this fascinating comparison he makes. Just like the three times a day that I get to pray are the height, are the main event. Kach yihyeh lo yom ha-shabbat l'pri ha-shavua. Ki yom zeh mizuman lihidabkut b'inyan ha'eloki. Because that day is also set aside. So it's almost as if, you know how that feeling is we feel on Friday afternoon? Shabbos is coming, I got through my week, I have this time. He says, that's the way we're supposed to feel about tefillah. Now, I'd venture to say that some of us feel this about Shabbos. Probably many of us feel this about Shabbos. Very rarely do I meet someone who feels this way about tefillah. But I'd like to suggest that tefillah and the times that we set aside for tefillah are just, we don't take advantage of what they are. We don't see it for what it is. And that I'd like to give some suggestions how to make the times we daven, whether we daven once a day, twice a day, three times a day, whether we go beyond that and find time to say Tehillim, somehow how to make that the focus of our day and the most wonderful time of the day, in fact. There are many reasons why tefillah is, for all of us, very stale, often meaningless. We can't seem to concentrate. We don't know if the words are really asking for the things we want to ask. We're uncomfortable with God. And especially at difficult times, we're uncomfortable with God. At its simplest state, tefillah is simply to spend time with the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's what it is. And that's something that can be great, but it's something that just makes us a little queasy. It sounds a little strange. It sounds hokey. Maybe that's something they do off in some yeshuv or moshav somewhere, but that's not like really what we do. But the reality is that if we make time for tefillah, it can be a very, very powerful experience. The first thing I would suggest, and it's a little different sometimes with women, whether they're going to a minyan, and I very much encourage women to daven b'tzibur. There's no reason why women shouldn't also daven b'tzibur if they're able to do that. The first thing is to make time for tefillah. To make time for tefillah. Very often, we daven either very quickly, or I dare say those who aren't davening in a minyan, on the way to something else, in the car, walking up Lexington Avenue, in the elevator, right? That's basically the place that tefillah has been relegated to. There's no way for tefillah to be an experience if we don't give it time. There's no way. It's going to be a mitzvah. We may get credit for saying the Shemoneh Esrei, but unless we give it time, unless it has its place, it's never going to be something that we enjoy. The second thing is the ability to see the time that we spend in tefillah as quiet time and time that's away. Sometimes when I speak to groups who aren't religious, I speak about the idea of praying three times a day as simply time to get away. It's amazing how we don't take advantage of this opportunity to go away. There are people that spend hundreds of dollars a night to go to a spa. And, you know, they only can get one treatment a day. People who like a massage or whatever, they get their nails done. It's about 10 minutes a day, an hour a day. The rest of the day, there's nothing to do. But they pay all this money to go away and to get away. Did you ever consider the possibility that three times a day, we need to get away from the world? Three times a day. You know, I'm a busy shul rabbi. I've learned to understand that the only time that I'm not reachable is when I'm in the middle of davening. It's the only time I'm able to get away. In a world of cell phones, in a world of iPods and communication and everything, the only time that we really have left in this world where nobody can bother us is in the middle of tefillah. I hate to say it. The restroom is not sacred. There are no times, there are no places where people can intrude on us. I told my shul a long time ago not to wait for me when they're going to start the Chazaras Hashatz. You know why? Because I don't want to lose that time. People want to get out of shul, that's fine. I only have some an hour a day, let's put together all the tefillot. I only have an hour a day where I get to be alone, where I get to be myself, where I get to relax, where I don't have to put on a facade, where I don't have to pretend to be something. I don't have to be responsive. I just have time away. How often have we thought of tefillah as an opportunity just to be with the Ribono Shel Olam? It's a treasure that's so close to us, and we just don't reach out and grab it. The first thing I do, and I know this may sound strange, the first thing I do when I'm preparing to daven is simply relax for 2 seconds. I take my 3 steps forward, and I do something that most people don't do when they start the Shemoneh Esrei. I just go, do it. It's the most wonderful time. People rush through the Shemoneh Esrei. What are we going back to? You know what I really have trouble understanding is when people rush through the Shemoneh Esrei in shul at a minyan. Are they that excited about Chazaras HaShatz that they need to finish? What, where are you? You're not going anywhere anyway. I understand if you could leave already is one thing. But the ability to be Shivti Beveis Hashem, what is a person in such a rush for? Try it. Try to simply relax when you're davening. And to imagine that you're standing and talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a very, very powerful thing. It's a state that very holy people can appreciate. For many, many years, I struggled with the need to get out of shul early at the end of Shacharis. I'm the rabbi, I'm supposed to, besides my role in YU, I'm a rabbi of a shul in Queens, I'm supposed to set the example. It's very, very hard, even when you daven at 6:30 in the morning, to not be thinking about what's coming next. And I'm as ADHD as the next person, and I just, you know, it's time, you got to go. And what happens is, in any minyan, I don't care how early in the morning the minyan is, people start just drifting out there towards the end. So for years I've been trying to tell people, and tell myself, I can't really get to anything. Do I really think it's going to help? Like, if I believe God is in control of traffic, do I believe that? If I really believe God is in control of traffic, do I really think I'm going to get to where I'm going faster by running out on Him? And what does that say about my belief? So that I've been trying for years. Doesn't work. Never kept me in. Until after this year, the massacre in Har Nof. You know, I was in a very tough position that day. Obviously, it affected all of us. And it affected the YU community, especially because of the Tverskys and the Soloveitchiks. And I had to go down to the Beis Medrash and say something. What was I going to say? Is there anything, you know, I'm the last person who likes to tie one thing. This is the lesson that you should learn. That's very not me. This happens, so therefore, I try to stay far away. I don't know why God does things. I don't know why there are tragedies. I know that whatever tragedy that comes, it's not the second or third tragedy. It's the 100,000th tragedy that's happened to our people. I'm not going to start to begin to understand why HaKadosh Baruch Hu does what He does. But I came downstairs to the Beis Medrash, and I said, all I know about those 4 people who were killed is that there's nothing that they would have liked better than to stay till the end of shul that day. If there's one thing they would have wanted, Acha sho'alti me'eis Hashem, shivti beveis Hashem. They were murdered in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei. How could I leave shul early? How could I do that? All they wanted was to stay a couple of... I said, this is not the reason why it's happening. It's not chas v'sholom that people leave shul early. So that's absurd for people to say things like that. We don't know why God does that. But I made a commitment, which so far I can't break. I try, but I can't bring myself to leave shul early. Because I know that that's the one thing they would have wanted, is to stay till the end of shul. So one thing I think that's very important in terms of trying to make our tefillah more meaningful is regardless of anything that happens during tefillah, is to simply set aside time for it and to not rush and to not run out at the end and try to make it time that's special, that's set aside, that's for nothing else except spending time with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the first thing I'd suggest. The second is to try to talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ironically, the way we would talk to another person. We're always trying to think, you know, what is HaKadosh Baruch Hu? How, you know what's so hard about talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? It's not just that he happens to be invisible, which makes it very difficult, but we don't know what he is. We have no idea what we're, you know, close your eyes for a second and imagine, I'm sure that once in a while we had a good Shmoneh Esrei and we imagined we were talking to God. What were we imagining? Sometimes we try too hard. Sometimes I believe that we try too hard and we need to speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu minimally like we would simply speak to another person. And we have to remember that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to hear from us and we can say anything we want to him. Some of the most meaningful Shmoneh Esreis I ever davened was when I used to work for NCSY as a kid. I used to drive up and down the Garden State Parkway in New Jersey. So inevitably, I'd get caught davening mincha sometime on the road in the afternoon. So, you know, it's hard to relate to this, but you know, it's 4 o'clock, sun is setting, you got to daven mincha. So what are you going to do? So you pull over into a gas station, right? You pull into a gas, you don't want to daven behind the wheel. So you pull over to a gas station on the Garden State Parkway, but then the problem is you got to talk to yourself and you look like an idiot. And you start saying, it's such a big chilul Hashem to look like I'm crazy that maybe I shouldn't daven. You start to rationalize, I don't have to daven, it's a bigger chilul Hashem. Just leave the whole thing. But there was another answer. I know this is very hard to understand. There used to be something called a phone booth. I've never seen one of these things. There used to be something called a phone booth. And this was in the old days when there weren't cellular phones. So you could actually make a phone call from the gas station. So what would I do? So the old days, I would just get out of my car and daven next to the car. I was so self-conscious that people were looking at me that I couldn't daven. So what I realized was, I could daven in the phone booth. That's great. So I'd open up the door, and I'd take 3 steps forward. I'd pick up the phone, and I would daven Shmoneh Esrei. Daven the whole thing. I wouldn't shuckle as much as maybe if I was in shul. I'd say the whole Shmoneh Esrei. I'd put the phone down. I'd take 3 steps. The whole thing looked normal. Some of the best Shmoneh Esreis I ever done. Because we're used to not seeing somebody on the other end of the phone. Now, I'm not suggesting you do this as a general practice, or you do this on your cell phones, or... But it was some of the most meaningful Shmoneh Esreis I had because I was talking to the Ribbono Shel Olam. I was just talking to him. I was just spending time with him. I felt like I was having an actual conversation. I felt I davened better on the phone. We don't necessarily need to have a phone in our hands to make our conversation with the Kaddish Baruch Hu real. You know, there's much said about adding things into Shmoneh Esrei, and you should speak to whoever you ask your halachic shailas to about where's an appropriate place to add things into the Shmoneh Esrei. But one of the nice things about spending time in davening and trying to relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the ability to really talk to him. The ability to really talk to him. I have a whole system of tefillah. I think there's a very big difference between the different tefillot of the day. Someday there'll be a book. Between Shacharit and Mincha and Ma'ariv. Shacharis is the time that we should be asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for whatever we want. Shacharis is the morning. Avraham, Chesed, Kadosh Baruch Hu providing for us. It's the beginning of our day. I've made it a practice to speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Shema Koleinu and to ask him for the normal things that I need that day. It takes a while, but where am I going? And I say everything else in the Hebrew, just like the rabbis told me to, and I say the whole thing, and then I get up to Shema Koleinu, and again, some prefer to do it in Shema Koleinu, some prefer, and I stop, and I say to myself, what do I need today? What's going on today? Doesn't he want to help me? Do I have to go through this day alone? And I ask him, in my own words, in English, for whatever it is that's coming up, whatever it is, whoever I want to pray for, whoever I can think of that's sick. But it's not just a list that I have in front of me in my sitter. I ask him, whatever's coming up that day, I don't take out my phone then, because it'll distract me. But in my mind, I'm going through, what big things do I have today? What's going on? And I ask him for help. And you know what? I find that to be a very big relief. I find that knowing that I don't have to do everything myself is a tremendous stress reliever. I'll sometimes walk into a Shmoneh Esrei really upset and concerned about something. The goal of Shmoneh Esrei is to realize that I have help. And he doesn't always do what I want him to do. Neither does a parent. He doesn't always say yes, but he's going to be there with me. And I don't have to fix these problems alone. After a good Shmoneh Esrei, you know, we have this whole thing of taking steps forward and steps back. We take 3 steps forward because, you know, we're trying to get ourselves in the mood. We're trying to pretend that we're before a king. So I take my 3 steps forward and I take my 3 steps back. After a good Shmoneh Esrei, I'll tell you what I feel. After a good Shmoneh Esrei, when I take my 3 steps back, I don't imagine that I'm leaving his office. After a good Shmoneh Esrei, I feel like I took his hand and he's coming back with me into my life. That's a good Shmoneh Esrei. When you feel like you don't have to figure it out all yourself, you don't have to do it yourself. You know what's amazing? It's amazing. Do you ever have one of those times when you were just so... It wasn't that you were just stopped. Usually the reason why we don't pay attention in Shmoneh Esrei is because we just don't pay attention. I don't know. Not like anything in particular is distracting us. But you ever have a time where like there was something that was bothering you so much you couldn't pray? Like, I'm too nervous about this. I'm thinking, I'm so mad about this. There's something going on. There's a fascinating comment by Rabbi Adin Steinsaltz. Rabbi Steinsaltz says as follows. He says, if you walk into Shmoneh Esrei and you're so stressed out about something that you can't pray, it's okay. As long as you ask him for help with that thing. So I'm really nervous about a test. I'm really nervous. I can't concentrate. I'm really nervous. Fine. But how did you not ask him for that in the Shmoneh Esrei? Do you really think you're taking the test by yourself? Do you really think he has no role in the process? Sometimes we don't ask him for the most basic things that are on our mind. I'll tell you something that happened in the spring. We were having, you've heard that Yeshiva University is having certain budgetary issues. You may have heard that issue. So we were having this very high-level meeting with everybody to figure out how to save, like, you know, more money than I'll ever know in my whole life. More digits, right? So we had a meeting that basically went from 9 in the morning, started at 9 in the morning, and there were a lot of people there, Jewish men, Jewish women, non-Jewish wonderful people. And it was getting close to Shkia, and we just had to daven. We just had to break. And the meeting was kind of coming apart. Everybody was already all stressed out and all upset. So I said, okay, you know, we're going to daven mincha. So I invited everyone who wanted to pray to stay, and, you know, 10 men stayed. 10 men stayed, and I'm like the rabbi of the group, so I went up and I led the Shmoneh Esrei. Okay, good. So at the end of Shmoneh Esrei, I turned around to the 9 other men who were davening in the room, and I said, I never say things like this, but let me ask you, did any of you pray in Shmoneh Esrei that God should help YU? They're like, what? I said, we just spent the last 8 hours trying to figure out how to fix this place. Did anyone think at the mincha afterwards that maybe he could help us? We just don't think that way. But how could we not? Do we really think we have to come up with all the solutions by ourselves? We really have to figure everything out by ourselves? It would be wonderful if we could ask God questions and we could get answers from Him. It would be wonderful and meaningful if we could actually ask Him the things that we want and He would respond. I can do this for you. I can't do this for you, or I'm not prepared to do this for you. This happened because of this. This happened because of that. It's wonderful. Sometimes you can't do that. But when you're really close with someone, there's an incredible relief in feeling just that you're not alone and you're going through it with them. There are times where there are no words to say. I always say to the young rabbis who I try to teach in YU, you know, we talk about what does one do when there's a tragedy? Like, you know, the rabbi gets a phone call. What does one do? You know, I say run. Run to the place where they have the thing. But I don't know what I'm going to say when I get there. It doesn't matter what you say. Don't say anything. Just be there. Be there. Let the person understand that they're not alone. When we daven, we are able to potentially feel that feeling that we are not alone. And God doesn't answer all the questions we want. He doesn't tell us exactly how He's going to work it out. But we should feel relieved when we daven. That someone who's more powerful than any obstacle that we're up against can, if he wants, fix it. And if he doesn't fix it, he's not going to leave my side. That would be something I'd look forward to. I can begin to understand what the Kuzari is talking about. That tefillah is an experience that I can't wait to get away, and I can't wait to be with the Ribon Shalom. But how do I get away? I want to show you on the back of the second page a piece that changed the way I daven. Now, this may be too strange for some of you. I'm just giving you that warning before we go there. But this changed the way that I daven when I saw this. It's from a sefer called He'arat HaTfilah by Rabbi Uri Weissblum. And he gives a fascinating suggestion, which is so perfect for a night like this. He says, how do you, basically what he said is, how am I supposed to be with God and feel relieved and feel comforted if I got all these problems? Do you ever, he says, start davening and get distracted because you're davening well? It's not one of those blank out Shmoneh Esreis where I don't remember if I said it or not. But like I get to Rifa'enu, and I include the name of a chola, and then, because our minds are just so all over the place, I start thinking about the chola, and then I think what the chola was wearing, and then I think about what I'm wearing, and I think what I'll wear tomorrow, and suddenly I'm done with Shmuel, I have no idea what happened. So he says, if my Shmoneh Esrei is about nothing, if it's not about real life, it's not about real things, it's not meaningful, but how do I make it about real things and stay focused? And feel relieved rather than stressed out. So look what he says. Mi shenasa pa'am b'matos. Whoa. If you've flown in a plane, zocher, you remember. Ketzad b'rigaim harishonim me'az shematchil lanua. From the moment you start, the plane starts to move. Nosehu al pnei hakarka. Right? We're moving. We're moving on the ground. Adayin kashur hu el ha'adama. The beginning of a plane taking off, you're very connected to the ground. The things going on in the ground. Bevat achat, mitromeim hu me'al pnei hakarka, umagbiya tos yoter v'yoter. And then is that whoosh moment, right? We all know that. Whoosh. You feel suddenly you take off. Kemishke mistaklim miba'ad lachalon el eiver ha'aretz roim. Echabatim holchim umit gamdim. They're dwarfed. that gets small, right? You're looking at the side of the plane. Come on, admit it. You do this sometimes. You look at the side of the plane, even though you've been on a plane a lot of times. It's really cool to look at the stuff getting really small. You're looking outside. You guys are all wondering, where is he going with this? Where could this possibly have? Kechol shehamatos magbia mitkatnim habatim yoter v'yoter ad shenirim kekubiyot. They're like dice. Everything gets really tiny. Ovrim al pnei artzot v'alkol kol kach katan. Kol zman shehutas mitachad la'ananim hakol kol kach koder. Right? You're looking down and the world is there and it's getting smaller and smaller, but it's there. And then, you know, you have that moment where you go into the clouds. And imagine it's a rainy day. You ever do that? You ever take off on a really rainy day? And you're looking at the world and the world is difficult and the world has got its problems and it's got all these things. But suddenly, Ach kasher hu mavkia, when you break through the clouds, umitromem me'alehem, mitkaleit lefeta hashemesh hazorachat b'melo hadara. You know that moment when it's pouring and they're really thick clouds, and then you break through the clouds and you realize it's always sunny up there. I mean, you know, during the daylight hours. It's always sunny up there. Mitachat la'ananim kol kach chashuch. Me'al ha'ananim kol mu'ar. Beneath the clouds, it's so dark. There's so many complications. But when I break through the clouds, everything is light. What he suggests, try this once. You don't have to tell anybody you're doing it. This is the way we should feel when we take our steps forward for tefillah. We start in a world that's difficult, and it's raining, and it's dark. And it is dark, and it is difficult. But imagine as we're beginning the Shmona Esrei, that takeoff, that moment that we get through the clouds. And suddenly I'm just standing there with the Ribono Shel Olam. And the clouds are still there. And I can look down at the clouds and I see there's a storm. And I might even be able to look through certain parts of the clouds and see what was going on down there. But right now, I'm at the Ribono Shel Olam. And it doesn't look so bad anymore. Because it's me and the Ribono Shel Olam. And the world is still there. And it still stinks sometimes. And it's still difficult. But above those clouds, it's always sunny. And above those clouds, I can have my time and my place with the Ribono Shel Olam. I don't want to rush out of that place. I'm not looking to get out of shul anymore. I have to be coaxed to come back. It's so difficult to find a Kadosh Baruch Hu in this world. So difficult. But it's not as hard as we might think. To find the times, to take the times away. Why is it that we daven 3 times a day? Why can't we just daven in one long davening in the morning? The answer is it's too much time away from the Ribono Shel Olam. Just like, says the Kuzari, we need Shabbos every 7 days. And you know, not just the experience of being ready for Shabbos, but the feeling of kind of needing Shabbos already. We're different by Thursday than we are on Motzei Shabbos and we are on Sunday. It's been too long. It's been too long. I've been stuck down here. Now I have a chance to connect with you again. Let me discuss one more idea before we conclude. Because it can sometimes feel very, very difficult to feel like a Kadosh Baruch Hu's with me down here. One of the things that people struggle with too much, I'm just going to give 2 suggestions. One of the things that makes tefillah difficult for all of us is the fact that the words let's face it, they don't really say what I want them to say. The words of Shmoneh Esrei are not generally where I am, certainly not at the 6:20 minyan in the morning. Right? Think about it. Some of the brachas are easier to relate to. Refa'enu, you ask for parnasa, you ask for wisdom. Kibbutz Galias, I don't care a lot about Kibbutz Galias at 6:20 in the morning. It's just not where I'm holding. I'll admit it. The whole second half of Shmoneh Esrei is about a process of national redemption. It's just not relevant to me before breakfast. That's not where I'm thinking. I know I have problems coming up that day. I know I need a cup of coffee. I don't need Mashiach at 6:45 in the morning. The Shmoneh Esrei, which we're handed, is not just rote, is not just the same thing every day. But let's face it, if we wrote it ourselves, we wouldn't have necessarily written it this way. If we had open mic time with the Ribono Shel Olam, which we do, because we can include our own tefillot, but we wouldn't have necessarily asked for all of the things that it says in the Shmoneh Esrei. So it's hard enough to have kavanah anyway. It's hard enough to believe anyway. And now I'm saying brachos about things that are nice, but not necessarily what I'm thinking. So before we look at an amazing piece by Rav Kook, which I'm going to leave you with, I just want to throw out one little piece that I can't go without saying. If you look at the themes of the various things in Shmoneh Esrei, you should try this once. You can use an art scroll or Koran. They have those little words on the top of each of the brachos. Just the theme. Forget about what each word says. But just the theme of each bracha. Go through as you're davening and ask yourself, how many of these things do I care about? Really, it's okay. How many of these things, I mean, I don't mean like sort of course it's good if it happens. How many of these things would I really pray for if I had a choice? And then ask yourself, who's right and who's off? Me or the Anshei Knesset HaGadol? Really. There's a famous thing, right? Rav Hirsch says, Lehit Palel. Palel means to judge, right? Lehit Palel means to judge myself. What does that mean? I'm supposed to judge myself while I'm davening? It does not mean that I'm supposed to say, am I worthy for this? It does not mean that. It's a long story. It does not mean that I'm supposed to ask with each bracha. We turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu like a parent. We don't earn everything. Perhaps what it means is that as I look at the set text, as I look, this is a way we can judge ourselves. As I go through each bracha, I could say to myself, is this a bracha I want to say? No? Why not? Every time I go through the brachas of Shmoneh Esrei, I'm correcting myself. I'm saying, here was a group of 120 people who got it, who knew what was important, and this is what they said was important. And I know I should have my own opinion. But I need to get back in line. Just as Shabbos brings us back in a certain way to who we are, going to the less that Shmoneh Esrei is meaningful to you, the more meaningful it is. The less I want to say these brachos, the more I need to ask, well, why not? But that's just an aside. Look finally at the back, at this piece from Rav Kook. And this is what I try to remind myself when I'm trying to take time off and I'm trying to be with the Ribono Shel Olam, but at the end of the day, the tefillah is just not the words that I would want to say. Rav Kook says, HaTefillah HaMatmedet, this is from the Siddur Olat Riyah, the Siddur that they put together from Rav Kook. So there are five essays that introduce the Siddur. You can read the Siddur, you got to read the five essays. Help, hopefully with an Israeli sitting next to you. Read the five essays that are the introduction, I think it's five, that are the introduction to the Siddur of Olat Riyah Rav Kook. HaTfilah HaMatmedet Shel HaNeshama Mitametzet Hi Tamid. The constant tefillah of the neshama is trying constantly, latzeit min ha'helem el hagiloi, to go from hidden to open, lihitpashet al kol kochot hachayim, shel kol haruach v'hanefesh v'kol kochot chaye hagviyakula. Rav Kook makes a fascinating assumption that my neshama, the piece of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that's within me, is always talking to the Ribono Shel Olam. And it's always trying and waiting to be heard. Bet. Ein ha-tfila ba'a ketikuna. Tfila doesn't come correctly. Ki im mitoch ha-machshava, you have to think, she-be'emet ha-neshama hi tamid mitpalelet. My neshama is always davening. Hello, he afa umitrapeket al doda below shum hefse klal. My neshama is always talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When is it given a voice? When I daven. That's an amazing idea. That means when I daven, I'm actually saying what my neshama is saying all day long. In other words, when I go through the words and I try to make tefillah meaningful and I say, but this is not what I want, Rav Kook would say, this is what the real you wants. Your neshama, you're actually giving voice to not the Kaddish Baruch Hu outside of you, so to speak, but the Kaddish Baruch Hu inside of you. It's three times a day that we remember when we get away, when we're able to spend some time with the Kaddish Baruch Hu, when we're able to pull away, that we remember that there's a piece of Him in us all the time. It's an amazing feeling when you're saying it, to feel your heart beating and to realize this is what you really want. This is the moment that your inside, your neshama is actually being heard. Your neshama is much more sophisticated than you are. Your neshama is much more deep and much more spiritual and much more powerful than you are. And most of the time, you're not in tune with your neshama. But the three times a day when I finally get to stop, I can hear myself. I can hear something inside. I can hear that there's something much greater about me that's inside. Try this too. Try to listen. Try to listen not only to what's outside of you, but to listen to yourself. When difficult things happen, we have many, many questions. And it's important to understand that questions are normal, and questions should be asked, and questions can be vocalized. But we know that the answers aren't so easy in coming. But very often the reality is that it's not so much that we're hoping our question is answered, but we're at least hoping that our question is heard. One of the ways that our people have always found solace is by understanding that we can connect to something. It's just seconds away from us. Wherever we are, whatever we're doing, we have the ability to be heard, to have our moment, to have our time, to say our piece. Yes, it takes a leap of faith. Someone can certainly be cynical and say, you're making this up, there's nobody listening. But after doing this time and again, you begin to be very certain that somebody's listening and that there's something to these experiences. Tefillah is generally seen as something we do before or during a crisis. We pray with great intensity to avoid difficult things. Sometimes they're avoided and sometimes they happen anyway. But we shouldn't miss the opportunity to daven after as well. Whatever the result is, whatever it is that happens, we have the opportunity to find solace in these moments of tefillah. It is perhaps the greatest gift that we do not take advantage of in our time. The ability to take off a few minutes to relax, to make it our own time, to imagine that we're actually standing there with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to remember that He's with us for this fight, even though it's sometimes a very difficult one. And then to realize that somehow, even after that experience, we don't leave Him. But whether we take Him by the hand, so to speak, or we've heard, we got to hear Him inside of us, and these things are real, it can be one of the most powerful, powerful experiences. We live in a time where people go to the ends of the earth to find a spiritual experience. That is an experience that we can, without so much effort, but just a shift in the way we think, a shift in the amount of time we give to it, a shift in the importance we give to it, that we can have at least 3 times a day. Are there any questions anyone would like to ask? And they could be tough questions too. Okay, so I'll take any questions if you want in private. Thank you very much, and daven well.